I'm trying to picture like what order we'd be sitting in a like little circular table if we were actually together. I want to say Jack is to my right.
That's the opposite of how I was picturing it, and I hate you for it. The views expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the hosts. The hosts make no guarantee for accuracy of facts or consistency of ideas and opinions.
So I have a way I actually want to kick this off.
Okay. Introductions?
No.
Okay.
So thinking about communication, this is something that I was thinking about this past week, okay? And us being in sciencey type fields, I think it shows up a lot. Namely, when professors say that something is clear or trivial or easy.
And it's never clear, trivial, and or easy?
Correct. What's interesting to me about this is the few times that a professor says, this is hard. So this happened the other week in topology, where, so my instructor, he's a postdoc, right? His background, at the age of 15, he was on the International Math Olympiad team for Great Britain. He went to Cambridge for his PhD. He then, after that, worked a year at the Institute of Advanced Study in Princeton. And now he's doing a postdoc here. Okay?
Okay.
So, many times in proofs, he says exactly this. Oh, this is easy. Writes, you know, 15 lines of math and says, see? And we're like, yeah, sure, whatever. But the other week, we were talking about these things called free products of groups. And someone asked, just kind of asking for intuition, saying, you know, I don't really understand these. And Saul looks him dead in the eye and says, because these things are hard.
And you all just shiver with fear.
Yeah, exactly. So what I'm wondering is, like, for you guys, is that, like, super common?
What do you think, Mikhail? Does that come up a lot in physics? I feel like it must.
Well, my professor for analytical mechanics uses a lot of air quotes whenever he says trivial, which, I mean, so it's more like he uses it in a tongue-in-cheek manner. So he does that, and we get to a point in the problem where, you know, like, we're taking some differential of an equation, and he's like, and then it's just trivial from there. You can tell he's joking, but he doesn't explain it because, yes, it's something that we should know how to do, and it's not the point of the class to teach calculus.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I find kind of annoying is when he won't even point out that he skipped a bunch of steps, and then all of a sudden he'll just go from, you know, this, you know, he draws like a picture of, you know, some sort of system, and then he just writes down like the equations of motion, and I just have to go back sometimes like, okay, where the hell did that like energy come from? It's like, I don't know.
Yeah, for sure.
I have a professor that's kind of like that. Most of my professors do a pretty good job of understanding that it's not always intuitive and that there's a lot of steps that go into it that, although to them it may be pretty straightforward or they've been doing it most of their lives, so it just is second nature at this point, but they understand, okay, this is a room full of 20-year-old kids with blank expressions on their faces. This probably isn't coming that easily to them. But one of my professors is terrible about doing the whole, oh, you should know how to do this, I'm not even going to pretend to explain how to do this, when he has like a huge circuit drawn on the board and he has not told us what it does and will never tell us what it does. Probably the most abstract class I've ever taken, and it's supposed to be the most practical application of the knowledge that we've gained so far in circuits.
Really?
Yeah, it's very odd. But he also, to give a little background on him, he told Greg during office hours that he did all of his education through his PhD at MIT, but he didn't want to go to MIT when he was coming out of high school, but he got a scholarship to go there and then was pressured by everybody he knew into going there for his undergrad. Because once you're getting paid to go to a school, it's like you kind of have to, I guess. It kind of humanized him a little bit, but at the same time, he's also the professor who said Mother Nature gives no partial credit and is ruthless grading exams. Where if you make a mistake that is perfectly reasonable within the bounds of human error, he will say, if you built this in a lab, it would not work. Therefore, you will get 0%.
Jack, are you just highlighting and unhighlighting parts of the show notes?
Yes, yes I am.
Why? It's so distracting.
I need something to do with my hands. I'm a tinkerer.
Yeah, don't click around.
I didn't mean it.
You need a magic trackpad.
Hey, you just need like one of those things that like twirls around in circles that you can just fiddle with.
Oh, there's something that, oh, there's a device that somebody designed that's just, it's intended to just be something that you like fiddle with. Like it's like a little cube.
Yeah, exactly.
One side has like a light switch and one side just has one of those buttons where it like, it's perforated along the middle, and it can either be switched one way or the other. So it's just little things that you can just, like, fiddle with that aren't loud and aren't annoying to people. I need to get one of those.
Google, or on Amazon, it's called a fidget cube.
Oh, that's what it was. This is definitely the thing. Oh, they have a Kickstarter.
Ooh. Exciting. Oh. Well, it's going in the show notes for anyone who, I guess... fidgets, which I think is pretty much everyone. Everyone fidgets in some way.
True.
Okay, let's try starting at the top.
Well, something that I want to talk about, it's not exactly on here, but like one of the big reasons why I was really excited to try this is because I feel like I could use some improvement on communication.
I agree. I feel like everybody can.
This feels like a good way to try to do that because it's something that I have to go look back on, you know, it forces me to think, hey, how can I do this better in the future? And, you know, actually build that review process into it. When I'm like having conversations, I try to think, oh, I should listen to what this person is saying, you know, not just wait for my chance to speak.
My turn.
Yeah, exactly. I hardly ever just like think about it and, you know, what could I have done better? Should I have interjected something from my life about that or just let them go on what they're talking about? I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, I definitely agree with you. I'm the type of person that I have a lot of trouble having my opinion changed by somebody else's opinion, but I'm very aware that I should because I'm by no means always right about things. And a lot of the time I just argue a different side for the sake of arguing, which is not productive. Yeah, your logic for having a podcast reminds me of why I told myself I was going to have a computer science minor because I was bad at programming. I was like, this seems important. I'll just make myself do it. That didn't work out. Oh, but this isn't graded.
I suppose.
I guess you could count our views and general public acceptance as a grade.
That would be if we were relying on it for income.
Are we not dropping out of school?
Someday.
I already filed the paperwork.
Yeah.
Retract it, please. If we just don't expect any views, then we won't be disappointed.
I suppose that's true.
So that's why I'm just like, yeah, this is just for me and I guess you guys too, maybe.
I guess.
I don't even like you guys.
We're just tools for Mikhail's enjoyment and growth.
Exactly.
I already knew that.
That's okay. That's what friends are for, right?
Is that what friends are for?
What is friendship?
Ooh, what is friendship?
God, Mikhail, turn off Skype.
No.
It's a construct of human society.
I think it's fully subjective. One person can call somebody else their friend, but that person may not think that that first person is, in fact, their friend.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it, really? Just a label that you throw at people so that they feel like they have an obligation to do things for you?
Mm.
I mean, kind of, yeah.
It's a very cynical viewpoint.
I was going to say, I like your cynicism. Because, like, I'm trying to think of a way to argue against that, but just like a lot of things... where you're just kind of like, it just feels wrong, like slavery, you know? the only argument against it is like, it's just not right, I guess, you know?
But, and here we go, comparing friendship to slavery.
It's emotional slavery. I may not be in chains, but I do feel an obligation, and the consequences for not fulfilling that obligation may be severe.
Speaking of obligations, so the holidays are coming up.
Oh, God. Now you're comparing slavery and friendship to gift-giving?
Well, that's part of the obligations, isn't it? And that's something true. That I struggle with. And that's why I find the holidays kind of an anxious time, because I don't know, who should I get gifts?
So one solution are white elephant gift exchanges, which are sub-$5 items that generally are useless. Then you're all on the same playing field.
Oh, that would make things so much better.
One time for white elephant, I brought a fork.
I was there.
You were there, Miguel.
It happened.
Someone gave me a... Or didn't give me. It was someone else giving someone else in the exchange. But that's neither here nor there. The rolly wheel broken off of an office desk chair.
Oh, incredible.
And I wrapped a 1/4 full bottle of bug spray in tin foil.
Aerosol or pump action?
I guess it would be aerosol.
Right?
That's such an awesome question. The only clarifying question he needed.
I like talking about gift giving and what you think about it, Mikhail, because I feel like you're going to be the one that has less traditional views on it from the onset. So let's kind of work our way outward. So, like, we both have parents.
Okay, yes.
We all have siblings.
Mm-hmm.
We all have a significant other.
That's true.
And we all might have outside friends.
Might.
We'll see how this podcast goes. So, like, your parents. Every family's kind of different, but what's kind of the deal with you guys?
Well, as far as my parents go, like, do you mean getting gifts for our parents or how gift-giving works with our parents, like that dynamic in general?
I guess both.
Okay. I guess they're pretty intertwined. You can't really talk about one without talking about the other. Yeah. As far as my parents go, it used to be the whole come up with a list of things you wanted and we'll pick and choose from it what we want to get you and then get you other things that we know you might like.
Mm-hmm.
Back when we were younger and things meant a lot more. Obviously, as the years go by, I don't know what I want for Christmas. I don't really need anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just come down to like, them just thinking, okay, we'll get him like maybe a couple things that he explicitly asks for, but outside of that, let's just give him some random crap we think he might enjoy and or find funny.
Sure.
From Santa.
You're highlighting again, Jack.
I know I'm highlighting again. It's what I do.
Okay.
Anyway, as far as getting my parents' gifts, it's very much just arbitrary. Like, my dad will give me an idea of what to get my mom. My mom will give me an idea of what to get my dad. Or I'll just kind of just pull something out of the air. Like, oh, this might be something that they might like. And they just enjoy it because it's coming from their child.
Mm-hmm. So, Mikhail, parents.
Parents. Yeah, it seems like, you know, something pretty similar to Jack. When I was growing up, they would, you know, they're pretty good about figuring out, like, what I might like.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, my parents, when in doubt, they just go for something practical, like socks or lip balm or some, I don't know. Getting them gifts, it's always weird. You know, like Jack, I would ask my one parent what the other parent wanted. And, you know, sometimes they would give us hints and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But usually what happened is I would wait to the last minute, like I do with all my gifts. And my brother and I would throw something together, like, the day or two before.
Sure.
Yeah, that's usually how that goes.
Yeah. What about you, Mark?
Yeah, for me, I mean, obviously growing up, fairly similar. I don't really have strong memories of making detailed Christmas lists, just because that wasn't really my thing. You know, the only thing that I think I asked my parents for was to look at noise-canceling headphones, because that's something that I would like to have. But that's pretty much the only thing this year. But then for them, I think it's pretty collaborative between my sisters and I. We just kind of text each other and just try and figure out what each person can get and what we can combine. Generally, I try and give my dad something kind of ridiculous, kind of on the side, because, you know, we just like to go back and forth like that. But so last year, my dad got me a Christmas album by a musical artist called Red Sovine, who does trucking music, which is essentially country music, except you talk, and it's slow, and it's ridiculous, and the topics are very strange.
I was on the outskirts of a little southern town, trying to reach my destination before the sun went down. The old CB was blaring away on channel 19, when there came a little boy's voice on the radio line.
So my dad got me this, the Christmas album of this trucker music guy, right?
Yep.
So I had been trying to figure out what I wanted to get him to get back at him. So I decided to get him Bob Dylan's Christmas album.
Oof.
Which came out, let me see so I can get my years right, 2009.
Gross.
So not only was he extraordinarily old when he put it out, he's also Jewish, which also kind of makes it funny. So that's kind of like my side gift for my dad. And then we generally try and do some sort of a bit more meaningful side gift for my mom, you know, because my mom cares more about that than my dad does, really. Like, my dad would like it, but he understands why we would put in the effort for our mom than him.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
That's kind of parent stuff for me. So, continuing around the circle.
I mean, I don't know, when you're talking about going up these levels, I didn't know that we were going to go into so much detail.
Sorry.
I was thinking, you know, where's the edge of, you know, the gift-giving circle? Because, like, clearly, I have to get my immediate family things. I'll probably get my significant other things. But then once you get to friends, it's like, I don't know.
I'm really bad about getting friends gifts.
Yeah.
Part of it's a time thing. Part of it is I have the time, but am I going to spend it going all over the place getting people gifts? Probably not. But I don't know. I have a lot of trouble getting friends gifts, and I like to play it off as, well, I never ask for anything, but then people get me things, and then I'm like, well, crap, now I'm the bad guy.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's frustrating.
I find that interesting, because you and I have never gotten anything for each other, as far as I remember.
No, not that I know of.
I've never purchased anything for any of my non-significant other friends. I've never received anything from them either. Like, and I'm not being like, oh, look at my sad Christmas life, you know? Like, I don't care. I don't want to be in that situation. Because, like, I think that that is the weird point for me. I'm not saying, oh, it's super weird if that were to be a thing. That's just another thing to worry about and spend money on when we have asserted over many, many years that that's not really necessary. At a level of friendship as, you know, 20-year-olds in college, it's kind of, well, first of all, we're in college.
Yeah.
I don't need to be using the small amount of disposable income that I have on this.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel, Mikhail? Similar?
I'm at the point, my brother calls me brash or blunt sometimes. Or just plain old rude. Which I'm having, it's weird, like sometimes I have trouble figuring out what he's talking about. But I guess examples would be, you know, if somebody gets me a gift or, you know, does something nice,
mm-hmm.
I tend to just take it.
Mm.
You know, it's one of those things, like, you're at someone else's, wherever they live, where do people live?
Homes.
Yeah. And they're like, hey, do you want, you know, something to drink or, you know, something to eat? I'll be like, yeah. Yeah, I'll take that.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really occur to me, you know, to offer that when they, you know, come over here. Mm-hmm. Or what I really don't like is the situations where I look back and realize, oh, this person wanted me to turn them down. Which I'm just like, why would you offer anything in the first place?
Oh, I hate when people do that. I think that's the biggest, oh, it's so frustrating.
Can you give me an example? Like, I'm trying to think of a situation where I have dealt with that, but nothing really comes to mind. Like, it's not surprising that it happens, but
kind of a passive aggression thing.
So can you lay out an example? not to put you on the spot, but I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah.
Whoever you is.
One example, this is probably one that would be, I don't know, a little more like if you didn't understand this, like it'd be kind of on you. Mm-hmm. Like say you're hanging out like at dinner with a group of friends and in the group of friends is a couple. And the couple mention offhandedly, like, hey, we're going to go see this movie after this. And other people start saying, like, oh, like that sounds like a good idea. But then it, like, what it really was, like, them wanting to go together. And then just, like, mentioning it. I don't know. It's kind of a stretch of an example, but it's the only one that I could think of off the cuff. Where they mentioned it, and they'd probably be fine with a group of people going, but at the end of the day, if only just the two of them went, that'd probably be ideal from their end. I don't know. Is that kind of what you meant, Mikhail? It was a pretty specific example.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. It's being specific. But I was more talking about, I can't think of an example from my own life, but one that I heard is sometimes like you go to a job interview. Mm-hmm. Then they say, like, oh, would you like some coffee? And apparently that's, like, used as, you know, a point where this person should say no. Like, I don't want any coffee. Or, like, you know, no, thank you. Apparently it would just be, like, really weird for somebody to say, oh, yeah, I would like some coffee. But they offer it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that happened at my last job interview. They asked if I wanted some water. And I was like, yeah, water would be great. But my interview was also, like, more than an hour long. And so I felt it was justified.
Got to bring your own water.
Bring my own water.
Got to be prepared, Mark. Jack.
How dare you?
So I have issues with both of those examples. Jack, issues with your example because...
Why would they mention it in the first place?
Yeah.
Oh, that's what Mikhail's complaining about, though.
Well, it's not what it heard. Sounded like Mikhail was complaining about. It sounded like exactly what Mikhail's example was, which is they literally offer specifically and then don't want you to accept. So your example would have to be this couple says, hey, you guys want to come see a movie even though they don't want anyone to come.
That's true.
Which I think wouldn't really happen. But no, Mikhail, I understand yours. Like, obviously it's a weird thing, but job interviews are kind of a different social interaction than like going over to someone's house. That's what I had in mind. Is like I go over to your house and you say, hey, Mark, would you like a cup of water? And I say, yeah, sure. And you just begrudgingly give it to me because you were super inconvenienced and not prepared to actually do that. That's what was in my head. Not like a job interview, which is like, I know that example.
It's a very structured social interaction, yeah.
Yes. And you have to kind of play the game, even though it's a stupid game. And I understand your issue and confusion with it.
Yeah, I guess another example is, in general, like, if somebody, you know, offers you help with something, and maybe, so say there's a guest at somebody's house, and, you know, they maybe have a meal, then afterwards, you know, they have to clean up from it, and then the guest, you know, offers, hey, do you need any help with those dishes? Then, I don't know, I feel like in some social situations, it would be weird if the host said, oh, yeah, can you help me wash these dishes, please?
That definitely makes more sense. And I think that, you know, that's kind of worth looking into because, for example, if I were at my girlfriend's house and I offered to do the dishes, I would 100% expect them to take me up on that offer. Because it's just kind of the established dynamic.
Yep.
Versus if I were to kind of be a... you know, 1 degree removed invite to some, like, holiday party or whatever. And I'm there because I'm a friend of a friend. And I offer whoever's hosting to help. Then I'd still help. Like, I'm also the kind of person who wouldn't ask if I wasn't intending to. But I think it would kind of put me off in that situation. Because the expectation is completely kind of being brushed off. Oh, no, you're our guest. You know, I'll do the dishes. You go have a good time. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good example. I like that.
Yeah, so I guess in a roundabout way, bringing it back to my point is I generally expect, you know, if people offer something, then they genuinely would be, you know, fine with me taking him up on that offer.
Yeah, you are of the impression that people say things if and only if they mean them?
I feel like that's a fair operating assumption because, you know, I mean, obviously there's things that people say that they don't mean. And I'm definitely going to end up saying some of those things on this podcast, but not in the context of, you know, hey, I'm offering something and then I get surprised when somebody takes me up on that offer.
Yeah, you know, like the difference between, oh, I accidentally said something that I don't mean because I just didn't think it through versus we both know exactly what I just said. And I'm guessing that you will not respond in the way that would inconvenience me, but you just did. So you have issues when people say something that is not their intended statement, right? It doesn't align with what they mean. Jack and I are sarcastic. Very sarcastic. I want to know what you think about us being sarcastic, sarcasm in the world. Do you ever use sarcasm? All those good things.
Yeah, Mikhail, why don't you tell us?
Because I don't want to. So...
The best way to kill a podcast. Why don't you talk about this? I don't want to.
Okay, I mean, it's fine. I use sarcasm freely. Under most circumstances, I enjoy sarcasm that other people offer up. Uh-huh. You know, like, I like satire. It's an interesting way to, you know, put a different spin on things. But I think most of the time it's pretty easy to separate satire from just being disingenuous.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to think. I'm struggling for an example.
Well, let me ask you this. To me, there's also a very thick line between satire and sarcasm, the way that I think about it.
Please explain.
So let me see. Satire is the use of humor, irony, exaggeration, or ridicule to expose and criticize people's stupidity or vices, particularly in the context of contemporary politics and other topical issues.
Okay. And sarcasm?
And sarcasm is the use of irony to mock or convey contempt.
This is getting back to a topic that shows up in my life a lot, which is words are hard. I guess in my mind they operated under very similar areas. I thought, you know, sarcasm, obviously the most common use for it that I see is just for mocking people.
Mm-hmm.
For satire, I just feel like it's more like just a dressed up version of it.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's how I usually think about it.
And I'm not disagreeing with that. I just feel like there's a definitive line, because when I think of satire, I think of specifically things like SNL or The Onion, or like it's more of an organizational or like a presentation sort of a thing, right?
Yeah.
Versus sarcasm, I think, is more on the fly conversational.
So let's bring another word in here. How do you think sass relates to this discussion?
Sarcasm, satire, sass.
So I think of sassiness as more of talking back. You know, their words are going to be a bit more biting and direct, versus sarcasm is very indirect and passive aggressive.
With much more emphasis on the passive aspect than the aggressive aspect, mm-hmm. at least in my mind, where sarcasm is not necessarily intended to be hostile, while sass is almost always intended as like a direct attack on whatever you either just said to them or just did.
Mm-hmm.
I think sarcasm as a whole is probably going to be less hostile on average than just like blatant sass as a response to what somebody has said.
So, response. And this is not a brag at all, but I was quite often called accused of being sassy when I was younger. Younger, sure. Meaning like, I don't know.
What a bragger. A
couple of years ago. No, and it was just weird because, I mean, from the way you think about sassy, that that's not how I pictured myself in all of those mm-hmm. situations.
I don't picture you that way in general.
Fair. I don't, I mean, I would agree. I don't think I'm that sassy, but people would tell me, like, wow, that was just a lot of sass that I got from you. And I mm-hmm. just thought, I was just trying to be sarcastic.
I can actually see that. I can see your sarcasm coming off as sass, now that you mention it. Because your sarcasm is a lot more, just because you're more, like, you, I mean, you were talking about this earlier, where you come off as blunt, where yeah. when, like, your attempt at sarcasm may just come off more, and not saying that I'm not a blunt person, I would argue that I'm pretty blunt in day-to-day conversations.
Yes, agreed.
But I can see how your, like, style of bluntness, or maybe you're just, like, your delivery in general, mm-hmm. could come off more as sass than as sarcasm.
I don't know. I think this is just an interesting look at words in general, because, like I've said, they're hard. I just, the way that people, like, use words, it's so weird, because, you know, it's so arbitrary the way that people think is the correct way to speak. I'm doing air quotes, you can't see it. But
it's a podcast.
I know. The quote-unquote correct way to speak is so arbitrary that how can anyone agree on it?
Nobody can. We will very quickly fall down a rabbit hole where we start on the lip by saying, who decides what's the right way to speak? Well, the people in power, namely white people, more or less, right?
And now you're bringing race into this. Okay.
I am.
Thanks, Mark.
And that's okay. It's not a big deal.
Oh, I know. I was just trying to be sassy.
I know. Fair. And I ignored you because it wasn't productive to the podcast.
Who gets to decide what's productive for the podcast, Mark? White people?
I mean, by definition, I guess.
In the hierarchy that we are in, it really is just kind of a historically white society that has decided what's the right way to speak.
I think this is a really cool conversation to be having. It's funny because just yesterday, because my girlfriend, who will remain unnamed apparently, she studies speech pathology and linguistics, and we were just having the conversation yesterday about how, because I think we all know this, that at some point, the, like, African-American, effectively the dialect of English was given its own title as being called Ebonics, and it was studied, so it was, like, effectively studied as its own language, and they treated it like it had all these different rules, and it wasn't until the last few years that it has now been officially called by linguists African-American Vernacular English, where it is not considered a separate language, it is just an extreme dialect. Again, if you spoke in that way in a job interview, it would not go over well, but it's English.
Mm-hmm.
If you spoke with a very strong accent and used a bunch of slang in your average job interview, I assume it would not go well.
Mm-hmm.
Though that may just be a commentary on just communication issues in general, because if it is difficult for you to communicate with somebody, even if you are saying exactly what you are trying to say, then I don't know. That's just a problem in and of itself.
So someone who went into a job interview, like you said, using some, turns of phrases very similar to that dialect, you know, would generally be frowned upon.
Yeah.
Right? Now, would, say, an Australian be similarly frowned upon for how they spoke English?
I doubt it.
Exactly. And that's interesting.
It really is, because you try to find, well, now where's the line?
There isn't one. Life is gray area.
Life is effort, and I'll stop when I'm dead.
Our unofficial official day camp motto was, life sucks and then you die.
Oh my god.
How old were the kids that were in this camp?
Well, we didn't tell them that. It was just between staff.
Oh, that makes it better.
Yeah.
Does it?
Kids, I have a message for you.
God.
Rip off that Band-Aid now. You'll thank me later.
That's right. Face the inevitability of pain and suffering, and you will be a happier person because of it. Right.
to bring it back to the language thing, because I think it's a really interesting topic, mm-hmm. is it's interesting to see how things change, because obviously there's a whole myriad of subtle ways that you change your speech patterns, like if you're talking with, you know, a professor, or if you're talking with your parents, you know, mm-hmm. or if you're talking with a significant other, it's going to change. And that's interesting to me, because I start to see it in myself, and then it's really weird, because then I start thinking about it, and then I start changing even more because I'm thinking about it. It's weird.
See, that's the thing. It depends to me on what you define as a speech pattern, because I don't know. I've always prided myself on trying as hard as I can to speak in the same way to all the people in my life and just vary the words that I say. I mean, like, if I go into a job interview, I'm not just going to be, like, dropping Effenheimers and making off-color jokes, because that's just not what's acceptable in that situation. But I guess it depends what you mean by speech patterns. Do you just mean, like, word choice, or do you mean, like, tone and, like, sentence length? I guess I don't know.
All of the above?
In my experience, it is all of the above, knowing myself. So first of all, because we're not used to podcasting, I would say that, at least for myself, and I can kind of hear it in Mikhail's voice, we're talking differently than we might otherwise.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, just because we're trying to get used to this whole thing.
I am not looking forward to listening back to all of this so many times while editing it, because I find my voice really weird, as I'm sure a lot of people do.
Fair enough. So I know for myself, I've gotten better, for sure. I've reeled it in, but for a long time I had what was basically kind of my annoying, semi-condescending teaching voice.
Yep, I know that one. You have gotten better.
I've tried to, you know, because it's one of those things where when you get in that mode, you just kind of forget. You don't realize.
Do you mean, like, the voice that you use exclusively when you're, say, like, helping somebody with classwork or, like, doing something like that?
Yeah, but even, I think sometimes I had to be in a certain mood, because sometimes when I help someone, I'm in a kind of a jocular mood, you know, it's just kind of, we're just kind of helping each other to whatever. Mm-hmm. But sometimes if it's a topic,
jocular?
Jocular. Do you not know what that means?
No.
Like joking. Like
okay. Jovial. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Not what I was thinking.
Yeah. No, not like.
Continue.
Locker. Fond of or characterized by joking, humorous, or playful.
Yes.
Okay.
But so depending on the mood that I was in, and depending on who I was with, my normal self trying to explain something was not sufficient. And so I would revert into stupid vocabulary and a really bad tone of voice. Once someone pointed out to me, like, hey, you do this and you sound like an idiot when you do it. obviously, that doesn't feel good. But it's one of the few pieces of criticism that I think I have successfully kind of taken to heart and reeled in a lot. But I think that showing yourself differently to different people is totally a matter of both word choice and tone of voice. You know, if I'm saying goodnight or having certain conversations with my girlfriend, it's going to sound way different than hanging out with you guys, you know, on a weekend doing whatever. So I think it's a mix of things.
Yeah. I want to go back to the point you had about explaining things, because something I've noticed is when I explain things to people, often it's like I'm unsure of their background.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the times, and, you know, the topic that I'm trying to explain, especially, like, there was, like, a TA had an office hour in Keller, and I was there, and there were a bunch of people who were, you know, working on this computer science thing. Mm-hmm. And the TA, well, he was obviously really busy because this room was packed. You know, he was going around, and, you know, he was trying to make it around to everybody. I was talking with people around me. We were trying to figure stuff out. But then we got to a point where, well, you know, I don't know the answer. We need to ask the TA, but he's busy. So it came up that I was a physics major, and then I started explaining something about physics. I forget what exactly it was, mm-hmm. but I realized halfway through explaining it, I'm just assuming that these people know nothing, and mm-hmm. I'm going from ground level up. Obviously, these were people who, they were also in, you know, the College of Science and Engineering. They all probably took Physics 1 and Physics 2. But it's like, what kind of assumptions can I make?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
As much as it's difficult to Like, you don't want to, like, talk down to people, because I know how it's frustrating being on the receiving end of that. Like, somebody just assumes you don't know anything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I personally think it's far worse if they assume that you know more than you do, because then it almost comes off as, like, saber rattling. Look at these big words I know about my field. Oh, you don't know these big words. I must know more about my field than you do. And that's never what you, the impression you want to give off. So I always aim for the lower end, like they don't know anything, and leave it open to them to correct me if they do know something. So I don't have to explain like all of physics 2 to them in order to explain something about a class I'm in currently.
Yeah. So you're saying aim low?
Aim low. I think aim low is a safer bet 99% of the time, especially being in engineering. Because, I mean, and if you're talking to somebody else that's like going into like a STEM field, that's one thing. But like, odds are I'm explaining like electromagnetics to my girlfriend, the speech pathologist. And I don't want to assume that she knows that all magnetic and electric fields due to a wave propagating are perpendicular.
Doesn't everyone know that?
Who doesn't know that?
I think you're touching on something that's slightly not the same, though. Jack, you're saying, you know, you aim low when talking to your girlfriend. But, like, it's not really aiming low. It's aiming at exactly where you need to go because you know her background.
That's true. That was a bad example.
Mm-hmm.
That I should have definitely given an example with somebody else. But that, in general, I personally do believe that it's better to aim low because you're, I think, far less likely to offend somebody. As much as it seems like you're assuming that they don't know anything,
mm-hmm.
assuming that they do know things means either they won't get anything from what you're saying and the conversation will, if anything, paint you in a worse light because they, like, didn't get anything from it and it was a waste of time for them. What? Because they might not ask you clarifying questions. Or, better scenario from that is they ask you clarifying questions and you have to backtrack, which is just annoying for both of you. And so I think it's always better to aim lower and then let them tell you what they know or don't know rather than assuming.
Isn't the simple fix to just ask them what they know?
But people don't know what they know.
That also, I think sometimes that can come off as condescending, like, have you learned about this? Do you know this? Like, I've definitely like heard that come off as condescending from people.
But then that comes back to the, you know, the, what Mikhail and I were talking about, the self-awareness of how you're talking, which is obviously a practice skill that, you know, not everyone has acquired or will acquire or whatever, or is still learning. I feel like it's easiest for me when I'm talking to someone if they preface it with, you know, what's your background on something like this? And then I will respond with, assume I know basically nothing other than X level somewhat related to what you're talking about. You know, because then odds are they'll tell me something that even if I technically have the background for it, I haven't learned or whatever. But I guess that's, you know, me. It's obviously super situational.
Oh, exactly. That's why it's tough to come up with an example.
I think explaining things is a really interesting topic because I can see it in myself that I have the tendency to over-explain things because I just don't know what level of abstraction to pull back to.
Yeah, that's always hard. I agree with you.
Yeah, because like obviously there are details that I don't need to explain. They're important for the concept, but you can just kind of ignore them in some situations. It's just like I don't know where to, like, how to backtrack, and then sometimes I lose my place and I'm like, what was I actually trying to explain?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, as you said, words are hard.
Words are really hard.
Yeah.
Words are so hard.
So at one point, right after the election, there was a bunch of chalking, you know, that was happening on all the sidewalks around campus. I'm sure you guys saw this. Like, most of them were trying to be encouraging things. Like, a lot of them said, like, you are loved.
Some of them were pretty inspirational.
Yeah. Or you are enough.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that's another one. The you are loved was the one that stood out the most to me. It was the most repeated one.
Yeah, so I have a little bit of beef with that because whoever wrote that, I don't know you. How can you say that, you know, you love me? I feel like that's diminishing the impact of that word.
Oh, I agree completely.
Then I'm going to be in the stick in the mud that disagrees.
Well, it depends. It all depends on what you're going to use as your definition of love.
Yeah, of course it does. I'm not going to. I don't think any of us are under the pretense that everyone here is saying, I would love to go on a date with you and be with you forever.
Yeah.
I think it's saying that, know that there are people here who care about you regardless of who you are. And I think that's the power of the statement that should be taken from it, is not saying,
I am in love with you, I am your secret admirer.
Well, not even that, just being kind of superficial about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a matter of coming to terms that there are people in the world that legitimately care about anyone who would come to them with a problem. Like, I know people who would do that without thinking about it. And I totally get that it may feel to some people that it diminishes what love means, but because it's very clearly a different kind of love.
Like, based on the context. I agree with you on that. Yeah.
You know, because, like, I can say, hey, I love you guys, you know? And I think that's a very similar kind of love, in that we're good friends, and you can be confident that I'll do what I can to help out whenever. Because that's how I define that love and that friendship, and that's how I view these chalking signs, is people saying, you know, in the aftermath of something that was very harmful to a lot of people, saying, hey, whatever side you're on, like, we're here for you. Those are my thoughts on it.
Okay, well, I just want to be clear. Obviously, I don't think that whoever wrote that is saying, oh, yes, I love you, you know, I want to be your partner.
I'm not saying you were. I said, yeah. I don't think any of us believe that.
Okay, well, that's cleared up. Now, I want to say that, to me, it's just like, I don't think that saying you are loved in any way, at least from my perspective, helps me feel like I belong, because in my opinion, it just feels disingenuous right off the bat. Because for me, it's really hard to believe that there are people who can just care about anything. How can you have that much space in your brain? It's like, you can't have all of those things on your mind. You would go crazy. I feel like I didn't make my point.
No, so let me try and reflect your point back on you to see if I'm understanding you correctly.
Okay.
So you're saying you feel that it is disingenuous because you think that people are overrepresenting how much they actually care. Does that seem like a good spark note kind of adjusted version?
TLDR, what Mikhail said.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I guess, I don't know, in my opinion, and I'm sure that this probably isn't the popular one, I would rather have somebody tell me, like, I don't even know you exist, so why would I have any beef with you?
That's true. That's a very Mikhail way to look at things. I respect that.
Well, and I think that it makes sense. And I understand, like, there's a total difference between those two sentiments. And some people are expressing that sentiment, which I think is kind of getting at that, I don't know who you are, so, like, why would I care? As long as you don't pose an immediate threat to my life.
I agree with that sentiment. If it's not affecting me, why should I care? And let me just backtrack on that a little bit.
You can't. It's immortalized because obviously you're not the one editing this.
Well, no, I just want to explain it because I think that on the face of it, that can be taken in very much a direction that is not what it was meant to be. Like, why should I care about, you know, people who are suffering? And, you know, why should I care about things that are happening in the world? And I'm sure this is a topic we'll get to somewhere else, but it's like, it affects me when I hear about terrible things that happen in the world. I don't enjoy the fact that those things happen. I would rather that they not. But I know that terrible things are going to happen anyway. But also, good things are happening in the world. Ah, man, I forgot where I was going with this.
That's okay. I'm going to poke at you a bit, and maybe that will get you somewhere.
I'm sure he'll love it.
So your initial statement saying, I don't know you, so I don't have a beef with you, extending that to somewhere along the lines of, I don't know who you are, so not that I don't care about you as either a person or whatever, just that I'm not going to judge you, right? You're just a person.
Yeah.
The intention of the you are loved is obviously for everyone, but targeted at people who are actively being not welcomed in our environment.
That's fair, yeah.
So where the I don't know you, therefore you're not judged falls apart is once I get to know you, you may be judged. It's not a matter of not caring. It's a matter of just feeling welcomed. It's so the difference between what you're saying, Mikhail, and what kind of the chalk signs you're saying is you're saying I'm not particularly invested in you, so I'm not going to do anything to actively help you, nor am I going to do anything to actively deny you. I'm somewhat apathetic.
Get rid of all those qualifiers. I'm apathetic.
Versus saying, I am going to actively root for you. You know, it's very commonly said that if you're apathetic, if you're doing nothing, then you're not on X person's side, you're on the other side.
I don't like that statement.
I'm sure you don't. A lot of people don't. You know, that's why, you know, the whole idea of a social justice warrior and a lot of pushback against that concept has, you know, been happening.
That's true.
I'm going to make a qualifier here because I feel like I'm going to just be like yelling at myself listening back to this is, yes, I'm apathetic, but I also, like, people should do everything that they can.
Regarding what?
Whatever makes you happy that doesn't conflict with other people doing things that make them happy.
That's where things start getting so hard.
I know.
You know, what things do you do that make you happy, right? You're in school. You do physics. You talk to me almost every day. You know, you have a significant other. You know, you have things in your life that make you happy that, by and large, you would consider, oh, these aren't really affecting anyone, right?
Yeah, what I'm going to say here is I hope over the course of our conversations I can finally reconcile my beliefs because on one hand I'm really apathetic is like I don't care really what's going on in the world as long as it's not affecting me. But on the other hand, I actually do care a lot about the environment. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about how can I use less energy.
Yeah.
I turn off my lights all the time, make sure I take short showers, that kind of stuff. But now that I'm thinking about it, it's like, why can I have those two beliefs and have them coincide? Like, how is that consistent? I don't know yet.
Yeah, and I think that that's a good point. A question then I would ask is, so why do you care about the environment?
Oof. That was awesome.
That is a great question. And I guess I would say that most of the time I'm thinking about, you know, what do I need to do for me? Like, oh, I need to eat. I need to sleep. You know, that kind of stuff. But if I take a step and zoom out, I usually zoom all the way out to the earth.
Yep.
I don't zoom out to, you know, like what's best for my community. I don't zoom out what's best for the country. I don't zoom out what's like best for humankind.
Mm-hmm.
It goes all the way out to the earth. There's a lot of things that humans are doing that probably could be done better.
Mm-hmm.
I know I've been told over and over and shown many examples in the natural world where every little bit adds up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you make your inner loop in some sort of code just 1% more efficient, that makes a difference if you're running it a million times.
So then where do you draw the line when talking about zooming out on the environment between what is best for the earth versus what you inevitably have to ask is what is best for the earth while also maintaining a certain level of comfort for humans?
I think this conversation is going to have to be some other time because I have so much to say about this.
Okay, that's fair. We can bookmark it and save it to another file for next time.
I just want us to go to space, man.
Yeah.
I differ with Mikhail on the whole apathy thing,
mm-hmm.
but that, and usually day to day, all that does is give me more stress, which is why I respect Mikhail's ability to be apathetic. I envy it a lot of the time.
Okay.
Because I end up stressed about things I can't influence. Mm-hmm. Frustrating. Though at the same time, I have an inherent confidence in the abilities of mankind and an interest in seeing what we are capable of. Mm-hmm. And if there's anything that I can actively do to ensure that mankind will reach its full potential, I do those things. And that is my justification for caring about the environment and caring about what we're doing to our Earth, because our Earth is the only place that we know how to live right now. Mm-hmm. So if we screw it up, we're pretty much screwed. Mm-hmm. And so anything that we can do to protect our Earth, or at this point, keep it alive long enough to support us so that we can travel elsewhere and expand, is a worthwhile venture. And I don't know if noble is the word. I think noble is just a flawed word from the get-go. But
so let me poke and prod at you a bit.
Sounds good, thanks.
Just like I did to Mikhail. potentially raising questions that will also have to wait until next time, but that's okay. Where is your kind of reconciliation between the resources that it takes to explore space and how much they consume of Earth's resources while we're trying to maintain them?
Did you know that within the next 5 years, there are plans both to mine the moon commercially and to mine asteroids commercially? I'm very excited. As far as that goes, it is a matter of being more realistic about what our Earth can provide for us. Mm-hmm. And I mean, a huge aspect of it is that we refuse to end our painful, abusive relationship with oil and coal. Mm-hmm. Fossil fuels are the scummy boyfriend that we won't break up with because he gives us nice things. But I think we need to be realistic about what our future will allow and what our planet will allow for us.
Yeah.
And in taking that into consideration, we need to allow not those that know what's best. That's the classic why people complain about us elitist scientists, mm-hmm. is that people claim that somebody knows what's best, but at the same time, I think that claiming that, like a scientist that helped to develop solar power and an angry fossil fuel lobbyist are on an equal playing field is flawed. Mm-hmm. And is why we progress while simultaneously almost working against our best interest. Mm-hmm. One thing that I think I came to terms with only very recently when seeing like the science behind it is that eating meat is hilariously bad for our planet. Mm-hmm. And the fact that people pretend that it's okay and work towards making it possible is part of the hugest problem with our society, but it's a problem that you can't just flip a switch overnight and make everybody a vegetarian. Mm-hmm. You can try, but people will be very upset about it. Mm-hmm. Because it's just, at that point, it's just a quality of life thing. And people think that saving the Earth means living less comfortably, which you could argue to an extent is true, but at the same time, it doesn't have to be true. Just this past year, scientists at the U of M were able to grow meat in a lab from stem cells. Mm-hmm. They like grew it from cells and it had the texture and taste of meat. And if that's possible, then substitution of meat with non-meat is entirely possible without the huge environmental impact of raising billions of chickens, mm-hmm. And thousands of cows just to kill them while they provide us with almost nothing. It's just a matter of being practical, and people are not practical, which mm-hmm. is just frustrating for people that think that way. I don't know. I feel like I live in a practicality bubble being an engineer, and I feel like we all kind of do, mm-hmm. where any little puncture into our bubble by somebody who does not think in that way just seems so out of the ordinary and irresponsible, while at the same time, it is the majority view, and the way that we think is not. Mm-hmm. And I think part of what needs to take place in the next, maybe our lifetime, maybe beyond that, is for people to come to terms with the fact that life is not sunshine and rainbows if just because you're ignoring the problems that are not directly impacting you at the present moment.
Mm-hmm. I think that is a very good point, and that's one of the things I'm trying to reconcile within myself, is I know that there are problems that aren't affecting me now, but they'll affect me later. And it's like, I don't know why I'm okay ignoring them.
I think it's because it's really nice. I pick and choose which overarching problems I'm willing to let bother me, because I am very aware that eating meat is bad for the environment, and I ate a burger on Tuesday. I don't know. I know I've talked to Mark about this. Do you know the Green brothers, like Hank and John Green of Vlog Brothers?
Yeah.
Hank made a video where he talked about that, where he tries his best to cut down on meat. Making those changes is very difficult, but it's the act of attempting to make those changes in your own life that is the real, I don't know if life struggle is the phrase that I want to use, but I can't really think of the words to fulfill my thought at this moment. Just the matter of making that change, even if it's gradual, towards some end goal, rather than trying to hold yourself to the standard of, well, this is the right thing to do, guess I'm going to change all my behavior overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's, if you hold yourself to that unrealistic standard, it's the reason that people don't exercise, is they think that they have to go from, I am lazy and never exercise, to, well, guess I'm running twice a day and only eating vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you hold yourself to that standard, you're setting yourself up for disappointment, and that's not any better than just not changing anything, in my mind.
I'm going to bring that back to that point you made about the practicality bubble. It reminded me of sometimes when I'm thinking about the things that I do on a regular basis. It's like there's some things that I'm thinking about it and I'm realizing I could do this so much better, but I just don't. And I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I'm bursting my own practicality bubble.
Oh, exactly. I hate that. I hate when I do that to myself.
I mean, I've found some ways to change some of that behavior. Like, some things like eating meat. I don't know, it's like I don't buy meat a lot for myself, mainly because it's expensive.
That's fair.
Yeah. Something that I notice is, like, if there's meat available, I'll just eat it. It's hard to reconcile that within myself, because, like, I know that eating it in a minuscule way increases the demand, which increases the problem of producing it. But on the other hand, it's already there. Am I just going to let it go to waste?
Yeah, it's not like not eating that is going to save the chicken that died to make that. You can't uncook the bacon.
Mm. Something that I'd want to kind of look more into is how it's so much harder to make changes in your life that actually matter.
Oh, true.
You know, so for like example, Mikhail, you started learning to type in Dvorak. Means basically nothing. It probably won't improve that much anything in your life, but you're taking the time to do it, right?
Yeah.
For literally no reason other than aesthetic purposes, I have purposely changed how I write 5 or 6 different letters over the past 4 years of my life. I completely just retaught myself how to write those letters because they were more aesthetically pleasing and... So I didn't confuse my T's with my plus signs.
Your X's look so weird.
Oh, they look so pretty, though.
Agree to disagree.
It's weird how these things, which, honestly, the time and the brain power spent, like, changing how you type or changing how you write is kind of similar to, like, changing how you eat, changing how you exercise and spend your time. I think they're somewhat similar, and yet we just... don't do the things that are way more important to how we live our lives.
Man, there's just so much that I want to talk about.
I know. You're going to have to contain your enthusiasm.
It's just spilling out all over my desk.
You do that when you get excited.
I know, right? And it's like, oh, man.
I got to clean this up.
Gross. Those are disgusting.